source for everything paranormal, Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on the Gathering Radio Show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Gathering. This is Stephanie.
And this is Heidi. Happy Tuesday to everybody. And happy almost official spring. Right?
Well, you are optimistic.
Well, it's technically, we've got 10 days, right?
It is.
Not even 10 days.
Right? Yep. So. Well, that's true. And actually, in Minnesota, it's raining after getting another, half a foot of snow just 2 days ago. So, I don't know. This wacky weather we're having just continues.
Yeah. It is crazy. Crazy weather, and it was sunny yesterday, and everything's melting, and then today is raining, and but I don't know, we should not be surprised, because it is Minnesota.
The land of four seasons all rolled up in one on one day, I should say.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
So what have you been up to, Steph?
Oh, I've just been hanging, I've just been kind of regrouping and trying to recover from all the shoveling that I've been had to do, and that Sunday snow was really super heavy and my shoulders, I thought I was going to die. Can I just say?
Yeah, it was really heavy. And it was very heavy. It's so wet because it's getting warmer.
Yeah.
And anyway.
I think next year I'm going to just have to hire somebody to come and do all my snow removal because I just can't do it. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, have someone else do it.
Exactly. Well, especially this year, because it's so much. It's so much. It's just crazy. When I look out in the yard, it's just an unbelievable amount of snow out there. It's up to the bottom. It's up. My deck is 3 feet off the ground and there is snow up to the floor of my deck. So it's like, why bother? There's nowhere to put it. So it's crazy.
Yep, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just wanted to speak into it for a second. I had an unfortunate event this last week, and I had to let go of my dog, Bruno, and I'm really sad about it. But what I thought was interesting, I know we talked about this on another show, and I will hold it together. Now, this happened on Sunday, so it was just 2 days ago, but I'll be good for the show. But what I thought was interesting, because we talked about this on a show before, is that transition, from this life into the next. And what was interesting is when I was taking him to the vet to have this done, because it was a decision that it was time. And so, but what I thought was interesting is it's almost like once the decision was made and I talked to him and I told him what was going to happen, and that's like, we have this little communication. I think all people with their pets have this extra communication.
Yeah.
And so I told him what was happening. And up until that point, like the last week that he was with us was very, he was in pain and it got worse each day. And so I'm like, well, I can't let this go on. And it was, so anytime you'd move him, he would cry. Right.
Yeah.
And it was awful. And it's an awful thing to hear. And so I talked to him on Sunday and I said, it's going to happen today. You're going to be okay after this. Mm-hmm. So just hang in there with me while I get you down there and I'll take care of you and I'll make sure you're okay. And it's like, he was looking at me and it's like, he understood. So I'm hauling him around And I had my ex, who it was also his dog, so he was there. So we both went over to the vet, and we took turns holding him, and so passing him back and forth. And that, any movement, and he would have been crying, my dog. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do a peep. Mm-hmm. It's like he knew. He mm-hmm. knew what was happening. And I think mm-hmm. because of that awareness, he was able to start releasing mm-hmm. from his body, because he really, you could tell he didn't feel pain anymore. And the way we were mm-hmm. holding him, he should have been.
Yeah.
He should have been.
Yeah.
So I think it was really interesting if I look at it, you know, from a analytical perspective. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting to watch that process, even mm-hmm. though it was excruciating and very, very hard. It was interesting to see that transition.
Mm-hmm.
And that knowledge, and he was like released from his pain, and he knew what was happening. I could feel it. And so it was really good.
Yeah. He knew you were helping him, and he knew he was going home, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And he'll, like I said, he'll be there on the other side for you, and I'm pretty sure he'll come and visit you, you know?
Oh, he will. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting process to watch. And I think it is interesting when you can see before you actually leave the physical body, how much can transition
yeah.
in that space. So yeah, I thought it was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so awful, but it was
good so
to
watch. Sorry.
I mean, it's good to be part of that. So,
because we loved Bruno. Remember every time when you lived in your old house, every time I came over that, you know, that he was cute. He was so fierce and so barky, bark, bark. But then minute I had him, then he was like jello, right? He was like just, you know.
Well, he has to pretend he's tough. You know, he's 9.5 pounds of fierce, you know, he's going to tear you limb from limb.
Absolutely.
And then as soon as you pet him, he's like, okay, fine, you're my best friend. Can I sit on your lap?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, he was a sweetie boy.
Yeah, he was
so,
a good
one. I'm so sorry. So moving on. So tonight we have a return guest who last time everybody loved the subject and loved him, and he's back on the air tonight.
Yes, we have Bob Peterson with us, who is an author and out-of-body experience expert. I mean, I'll call him expert because he's written, he said it's his fifth book that he's written now on out-of-body experiences. So, I know we've had connection issues with him. Hopefully he's with us still. Are you here, Bob?
Bob, are you here?
Hopefully we didn't lose him.
He's not speaking.
Well, hopefully we can get him reconnected. I know he's actually in New Mexico.
He's a snowbird.
He is a snowbird. Oh, did I hear someone?
Bob?
Uh-oh. We'll get him. We'll get him.
Yeah.
We'll have to figure out what's going on. But he, he's a snowbird. He's down in New Mexico. And I guess every winter he is smart, unlike the rest of us, and goes somewhere warm. And this year he's in New Mexico. And he said that he had just finished writing his latest book and is working on getting it published. So I'm excited to hear about it and talk to him just about out-of-body experiences and, you know, his experience with it, how he got on this. So we'll get him back on the line here in a second, hopefully. And we can.
Because it's a good subject. I know last time he was on, I think both you and I just, it was one of those shows where you and I both looked at each other with our mouths hanging open like, oh my God.
Yep.
Which we do seem to have quite often. But, you know, not everybody in Radioland can hear that. You know, I've been hearing that some of the hosts, some Para-X, are actually videotaping their shows and putting them on YouTube.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Somehow they're melding the video feed with it because they're, like, doing the Skype. So then they record.
Oh, this is Bob.
Hi, Bob.
There's Bob.
There you are.
Hang on.
How are you doing? Can you...
I'm trying to switch you over to Bluetooth. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm having all kinds of technology issues today for some reason.
You know what?
Let me tell you.
Mercury's in retrograde.
Yeah, Mercury retrograde for sure.
Yeah, there you go.
So you're here, and it's perfect timing because we were just going to talk to you about your interesting subject. We were actually talking about when you were on our show last time, and how Stephanie and I, we're not together tonight. Stephanie and I are both in our own houses tucked away because of the ice and everything out there, so we decided not to go together tonight. But last time you were with us, we sat together in the same place, and we would stare at each other with our mouths open because we were listening to what you were talking about, and it was just so fascinating. We just sit there like with our mouths hanging open.
Yeah.
So,
well, now we're looking at each other via Skype, so we can probably do the same
thing. Probably do the same thing. So, Bob, we'd love to, because I know that there's a lot of our listeners maybe didn't hear the show last time or just need a refresher on this subject of out-of-body experiences. First of all, how did you get interested in this or connected with this?
Well, it's kind of a long story. I'll try and make it brief. But basically what happened is in 1979, my brother bought the book Journeys Out of the Body by Robert Monroe and gave it as a gift to my dad, who he thought might be interested. After my dad was done reading it and didn't seem very
interested, but like
blown away. And I instantly, it's one of those, you know, things that I knew I had to pursue. I was a very logical, very scientific oriented person, and I still am a computer guy. And Monroe's descriptions of flying out of his body and encountering non-physical worlds and basically acting like a ghost and putting his hands through the walls and things like that just seemed too outlandish to me. And I didn't believe a word he said, but, you know, as any good science-oriented person should, I kept an open mind and started, I decided to follow his directions. Monroe basically said, don't take my word for it. You know, I don't believe anything necessarily, but try it yourself. And he gave a procedure in his book to try and induce out-of-body experiences. And I didn't know what I was doing. I don't think I was interpreting his information correctly, but I tried it. And much to my surprise, I got instant results. I got a very scary encounter with something that they called the vibrations. And the vibrations is a precursor to out-of-body, where it literally felt like my body was being electrocuted. And you got to imagine this is a very scary experience, especially, you know, I was young and, you know, I was like 18 years old just entering college. And it scared the daylights out of me. And but at that point, it was like I knew for sure that there was more to this. And I, you know, I felt like Monroe was not making all of this up and wasn't just having dreams. There was something very much more tangible and palpable. And this is an experience that I knew I had to try and recreate. From there, I started devouring every book I could on the subject. And I tried Monroe's technique several more times, never worked a second time. Started seeing other techniques and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And eventually I had, about a month later, I had my first full-blown out-of-body experience, and it was very wild, like nothing I've ever experienced before. But that's how I got into it, and from there I was just hooked. It's like, okay, you know, this is a whole like a whole new world. I felt like, you know, Columbus, you know, I felt like I was, you know, staring at a completely new world that had been pretty much undiscovered, and there were all new laws of physics to learn, and you know, everything that both my religion and my science had taught me up to that point were incomplete at the very least and wrong at you know at the best. So anyway, I started pursuing these out-of-body experiences, and I eventually kind of got the hang of it, and I was able to recreate them. And then I wrote my first book, and it was published in 1997, so it's more than 20 years old now. And but it was published in 97, and basically it was, you know, what I had encountered. Because frankly, you know, as a science-oriented guy, I didn't believe any of this stuff unless I physically experienced it myself. So,
but I loved that.
So,
wow, there's something going on with the sound.
Yep. Yeah, we think we lost him or something. Yeah. Bob, I don't know if you can hear us. I think we lost you for a second. Okay, well, we'll see what's going on here.
It's that good old Mercury retrograde, can I just say?
I know, right?
And he's such a fascinating, it's so fun to listen to him, so I hope we get it figured out. You know?
Yep, exactly. Because I love hearing the stories of the actual out-of-body experience and like how he describes his experiences.
Oh, exactly. And he started this at 18. I don't remember him telling us that last time, but
I don't either.
Quite fascinating. And I don't remember him telling us the name of this book either, Journey Out of the Body. Have you read it?
No, I haven't.
Me either.
I've read some of his other like articles and posts, blog posts and book reviews and things like that. So,
Wow. That's cool. But yeah, at 18, come on. I don't even know that I would do that now at my age, you know, but, you know.
Well, I mean, so you've never done an out-of-body experience?
No. I like my body just fine.
Oh, yeah, but you get to come back. Oh, there he is.
Okay, he is back.
Yep, I'm back.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. What if you decide you like it so much better away from your body, you just don't want to come back? I mean...
Well, there are a lot of stories of that. A lot of people, you know, especially those having near-death experiences, which one of the common features of a near-death experience is an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people who have near-death experiences come back saying that they didn't want to come back. It was just so beautiful and peaceful over there on the other side that they didn't want to come back to their body, but they were forced back in. And I think that's the deal, is I think that we're basically we're here for a reason. We're given these physical bodies for, you know, whatever, any, you know, I'm not going to tell anyone what to believe, but I believe we come here for a reason, and I believe we're not going to leave just by accident and until that purpose is fulfilled.
Yep, I agree.
As much as you'd like to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Float around and just go anywhere you want to go, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Right.
So... Oh, go ahead, Steph.
Oh, I was just going to say, so you were 18, you read this book, and in this book it tells you exactly how to do this, and you did it. And you felt the vibrations, nothing like you'd ever felt before. Then I'm guessing you kind of got hooked on this and started doing it more and more and got better and better at it, am I right?
Yep, that is correct. I amassed a collection of books, and I'm still collecting OBE books, and I'm reading them all and finding their common threads, and... The subject never fails to fascinate me because it's just so realistic, and I never get tired of it. You know, it's one of those things that just completely blows you away. So yeah, I've read pretty much everything on the subject, and I've learned all of the OBE techniques out there and everything, and I've amassed a collection of information on it. And yeah, I tried to put a lot of that information in my first book. And then after my first book was published in 1997, I figured out a bunch of things that I wanted to say that weren't in the book. And so then I followed up with another one. But anyway, yeah, it's quite the deal.
So can you tell us about some of your experiences, like your personal out-of-body experiences?
I mean, most out-of-body experiences can be as diverse as in-the-body experiences. So you can do whatever you want, basically. It's not like a lucid dream in which the experience kind of pulls you from scene to scene and event to event. You can definitely be bored there. And so what I find is that a lot of my out-of-body experiences have been... pretty mundane, and like just this Saturday I had an out-of-body experience, and I found myself in a strange house. It looked like it was, you know, something out of the 50s in the United States, and I just started walking around this house and exploring it and trying to figure out where I was and everything, and you know, after probably 5 or 10 minutes the experience ended. So a lot of times the experiences are mundane. A lot of times when I have an OBE, my initial reaction is to do some wild gravity-defying, you know, flying maneuvers, and I do loop-de-loops, and just, you know, I play like a little kid, and then I kind of get all that excitement out of my system, and then it's like, okay, well, now I'm going to be serious and try and do some experiments, and then I'll go about doing something, you know, some experiment. So most of the time, they're pretty mundane and uninteresting. I tried to put a lot of my most interesting experiences in that first book, in both books, really. I mean, there have been all kinds of different things. I don't even know where to begin. For example, I did a series of experiments where I thought I would try and contact God, for example, see if there was a way to contact God. And it met with some interesting results, but not a direct God-conscious experience. I've had experiences in which met and spoke to my dead father after he had passed away. And that's not unique. You know, there are several books that have similar OBEs as well. And I've had other OBEs. I had an OBE where I tried for a solid year to try and contact a friend of my wife's who had passed away. And for a solid year, I focused every OBE on trying to find her and talk to her. But it's like that other person who's died has to be willing to talk to you as well. So there has to be a reaching out on both sides, I think. Mm-hmm. So I was not able to contact her for some strange reason. But I think it was because, you know, she was young. She was, you know, like 30 years old, and she had two kids. And it was just a very tragic death that she had done. And I think she was just so overwhelmed by having died and all of that she didn't want to talk to anyone, let alone me. And you know, the out-of-body experience is as diverse as in-the-body experiences, really. One of the common questions I get is how long they last. Sometimes, you know, most out-of-body experiences tend to be very short, and so just a few minutes. So a lot of times you have to make the most out of every second. The longest OBE I've had seemed like it lasted well over 2 hours long, and that's not counting a strange childhood experience that I described in the first book that is a whole different topic, so I won't get into that, but...
I was just wondering, so some of them, or you said that it's common for most of them to last a couple of minutes, correct? So
yes.
What do you think your longest experience was?
Yeah, my longest experience outside of the childhood experience was about 2.5 hours.
Wow.
At least that's what it seemed like to me. And in this 2.5 hours, I was going off and doing these things, and then I would be sucked back into my body again, and I would immediately exit again. And I went through this, you know, several times over the course of a couple hours. Some people have claimed to had much longer OBEs, but I really don't know. I can only tell you what I've experienced directly. Now, in my first book, I talked about a childhood experience in which I had a friend who gave me a bear hug until I passed out when I was a teenager. Yeah, I was a young teen. This is very, you know, when you're young and stupid and you do stupid things and you don't know, you know, how dangerous it is. So we were talking about what would it be like to have somebody basically squeeze the life out of you. And so I had this friend of mine named Frank. I had him squeeze me around the middle and give me a bear hug basically until I passed out. And my perception at that time was it seemed like I like the dream. It seemed like Earth as an experience faded away and was replaced by this entirely different reality. And it seemed like I was in this other lifetime for like more than 100 years. I mean, literally, it seemed like I was over in that other reality for a very, very long time. And after, you know, more than 100 years, maybe even hundreds of years, I remembered it was like I was walking to the grocery store or something like that. and I kind of felt dizzy and passed out. And when I woke up, I opened my eyes to, and I saw, you know, the trees above me and my two friends, Frank and this other kid, staring up at me. And I said, well, oh my God, you know, I couldn't even remember their names. It had been so long ago. And it took me a long time to just reorient myself. And, oh, I remember this place. This is, you know, called Earth. That's right. Wow. And I asked the kids, you know, how long was I gone? They said only a few, you know, only a minute or less than a minute. And wow. So it's like, wow. And they were like, well, what did, you know, what happened to you? And I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. Well, first of all, you know, it was really wild. It's like, how do you explain something like that, especially at that age? But yeah, I mean, that doesn't really count. I mean, in Earth time, it was a minute maybe or two that I had passed out, and my perception was that it was, you know, more than 100 years, possibly hundreds of years. And wow. Yeah, it was just wild. But that's about wild. You know, that's as wild as it gets.
I'd say.
But yeah, I mean, but since doing the out of body thing in a controlled manner, like with the techniques I describe in my books, the longest I've had was 2.5 hours. About, I'm guessing.
Wow, that's a long time, though.
I think that sounds like a long time, actually.
Well, and if you think about how. It's almost like the movie Avatar, where you go to sleep, except they're sleeping for the same amount of time that their avatar is running around. But that's kind of what it reminds me of. You know, you're sleeping, or at least in some kind of altered state, and this alternate you is going somewhere, like another dimension, another universe, another whatever, doing life, living.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. Basically, what I've come to believe is that... even when we're in the body, and even when we identify with the physical body, our minds and our brains are telling us that that I affectionately call the story of experience. And the story of experience is basically a fiction that your brain makes up as to what is happening in reality. And your brain is interpreting the five physical senses and basically saying, okay, this is the story, this is what's going on. And what you perceive in everyday life is not very close to what's actually happening. It's just your brain's interpretation of what's happening. And mm-hmm. in an out-of-body experience, what you do is you use tricks of the mind. And a lot of times you're using, complete relaxation and trying to starve the five senses down to a trickle of information to where your imagination can override that story of experience. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to basically send your story of experience off the rails. And once it's off the rails, you're no longer interpreting your story of experience based on your physical senses, but something else. What that is, I don't know. Science has yet to figure that out. I tend to believe that it's, you know, related to quantum fields or something like that. One of my favorite books of all time is by Dean Radin, and he's got several books that are very good, but he's got one called Entangled Minds, where he goes into some of the theories, and he examines things like telepathy, and he tries to explain, you know, how is this information being passed from one mind to another, and he's trying to explain it in various things like quantum fields and quantum mechanics, all of these things in physics that I don't quite understand. But it's a fascinating topic, and I think when we have an out-of-body experience, we're doing the same kind of thing. We're realigning our story of experience to a different set of data, and I don't know where that other set of data is coming from.
Hmm.
Now, that's not to be confused. There's another similar phenomenon called lucid dreaming, and a lot of people, I think, confuse the two, and unless you've actually seen the difference and experienced it yourself, it's hard to tell the difference between lucid dreaming and out-of-body, but a lot of people, I mean, almost everyone I've talked to agree that they're two different things, and my belief is that in a lucid dream, your story of experience is basically a hallucination that's made up by your subconscious, and I think that's what a dream is as well. A normal dream is a hallucination that's made up by your subconscious. And it's a story that's being played out for you, so that your story of experience is this dream hallucination. in an out-of-body experience, you know you're not dreaming. You know that your set of data is not being hallucinated, and your reality seems to be much more objective. In a lucid dream, you have a lot of control. You don't have total control, but you have a lot of control. The example I like to use is, you know, if you walk up to a door in a lucid dream and you think to yourself, now when I open this door, I believe that there's going to be a beautiful woman on the other side. And you open the door and there is a beautiful woman because you change that story of experience and it's your own hallucination. It's a personal subjective reality that you're hallucinating. In an out-of-body experience, if you go up to a door and you can expect all you want, but you're not going to see that beautiful woman on the other side. And a lot of times what you meet in your out-of-body experience doesn't match your expectations. And that's a big difference from a lucid dream. It seems to have its own objective reality. And like I said, I don't know where that information is coming from of this other reality, but it's certainly very realistic anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's fascascinating. And I just have some more questions for you, but we have to take a commercial break quick. So give us 2 minutes, everybody, and we will be back with Bob Peterson talking about out-of-body experiences here on the Para-X Network.
Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald from GHI, and you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock, The Dark Sun Rising, on the Para-X Radio Network.
Oh, hey Heidi, what are you listening to? Heidi. Oh, hey Steph.
Hey,
what has your attention?
Oh, I'm listening to Para-X, the calling radio show. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't. What's it all about?
Well, it's hosted by three guys, Jerry, Alan, and Will, and they talk about paranormal investigations, UFOs, cryptozoology, psychic phenomenon, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, well, it's kind of like The Gathering, but on Wednesday, right?
Yep, you got it.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling. The Calling Radio Show every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time only on Para-X.
You haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to the professionals on What Are You Afraid of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on Para-X Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on Para-X?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction.
We are ready to scare you.
Para-X.
Welcome back to the gathering. And there's Heidi.
We're both doing it at the same time.
That's unison. Right. In stereo. Stereo sound.
I wish that's what it was.
So we're talking to Bob Peterson about out of body experience.
That's a different kind of experience, the out of
exactly,
body.
Exactly, right?
So we were talking with Bob before we went to commercial break about the difference between lucid dreaming and an out of body experience. And I agree, Bob, that there is a difference. And lucid dreaming, well, I don't know. I guess I haven't had too many out-of-body experiences. I've had a lot more lucid dreams. But in lucid dreams, if things aren't going right, I can say, well, I'm just dreaming because I know I'm dreaming. Mm-hmm. And I can get out. I can just wake up.
Right.
Although waking up is like swimming through Jell-O, but eventually you can. And you're up, you're awake, you're done. And I don't find that that's the case with the out-of-body experience. I can't just decide I'm going to swim back home and there I am.
Right, and actually, you can transition from a lucid dream into an out of body experience, and I've done so many times. I've only had one occasion in which I could not seem to dispel the dream hallucination and get out of the lucid dream and into the out-of-body state. But usually what I do to transition from lucid dreaming to out-of-body is it's just like an act of will, basically. It's kind of like waking up. You dispel the illusion or the hallucination of the dream, and a lot of times the dream will dissolve, and it'll basically fade away, fade out of view, and you find yourself lying just above your physical body, like 6 inches to a foot above your physical body, and you're just floating there peacefully or whatever, and that hallucination that you were dreaming is now gone, and you're now in the out-of-body state. And so, yeah, that's one technique for doing out-of-body experience, is to use lucid dreaming as basically a doorway from one experience to the other. Because lucid dreams are a lot easier to create than OBEs. OBEs tend to be more difficult to create for some reason. It's like walking a tightrope. It's a very delicate balance of consciousness.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Lucid dreaming, all you got to do is realize that you're dreaming, and you could do that through, you know, a bunch of different techniques. You can set yourself reminders and triggers and all that. And one funny thing is, you know, I used to have nightmares a lot. I used to have nightmares practically every night. And finally, I got to the point where I told myself, well, if I'm in a scary message, or if I'm in a scary situation ever, I'll know that I'm dreaming, or I have to ask myself, am I dreaming? And so what happened is, you know, I'd be surrounded by, you know, grizzly bears or something like that. I have this thing about bears, but I'd be in this nightmare where I'd be, you know, attacked by a bear or something. And I'd just realize, oh, this is obviously a dream. And I would say, not this time, guys. And I would dispel the illusion of the dream and go right to the OBE state. And what I found is that my nightmares pretty much disappeared because I was confronting them dead on and using it as a doorway, basically, to trigger the out-of-body. And so that's one of the tricks of the trade.
I didn't know that. I'm going to have to try that, because that's using a... Because that happens all the time, the lucid dreaming. I do that all the time. So that's cool. I'm going to have to think about that.
So now there's... Now you got a challenge, Heidi. You can,
I do.
You can try that.
Game on.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, game on.
Steph, what do you do? You use lucid dream, Steph? Oh, I can't hear her. She must be on mute.
You know what? Little Bobo was making herself known, so I put myself on mute so nobody else.
And then Stephanie's not making herself known.
And I'm babbling. And you can't hear me, right? I don't. You know what? I don't dream a lot, to be honest. And I think it's just because I'm so tired. I just go to sleep and I sleep, you know? Although they say, supposedly we dream all the time. I don't know. Yeah. I don't remember my dreams.
Yeah.
I just, you know.
Well, not remembering.
Yeah, we actually dream every night, and what you can do is there's this there's another couple of tricks I'll pass on. A lot of remembering your dreams is just getting into the habit of doing it every morning. So first thing in the morning when you wake up, you know before you roll over, before you open your eyes, before you do anything, you basically try and recall, well, what was I just doing? And you grab onto any little thread and try to follow that thread of, oh, I was in a room, I was with a man, I was, you know, talking to somebody, and you just follow that along. And then you write down some keywords. Now, if you don't recall anything at all, one way that you can jumpstart the process is vitamin B6. Vitamin B6, at least for me, when I'm ramping up, getting onto vitamin B6 or getting off of vitamin B6 seems to be the most potent time. But I take a super B complex supplement every day, and it gives me all kinds of different, B vitamins, riboflavin and thiamine and all of these. And what I find is that it makes remembering your dreams easier. And so if you use vitamin B6, for example, like 50 milligrams, something like that, you don't want to overdo it because it can damage your liver. But if you just take one of these vitamin B6 pills or a super B complex or whatever, and when you're ramping on, what you'll find is that you tend to remember your dreams more in the morning. And then you get into the habit, once you've done that a couple times, you get into the habit of writing them down every morning. And it doesn't have to be a long, involved thing, just a few, you know, jot a few key words into your phone, for example, saying, okay, this is what I dreamed last night, you know, I was at the beach or something like that. And that's enough to trigger it. Now, remembering your dreams is not, you know, the most important thing. And it doesn't matter really what you're dreaming or, you know, it's not important what you were dreaming last night. What's important is that you remember it in the morning, because if you train yourself to remember your dreams, you're basically training yourself to retain a little bit more conscious awareness in that dream state where you're normally unconscious. Now you have to kind of pay attention a little bit to what's happening on the other side of that sleep barrier. And a couple of years ago, there was a magazine article basically that said, okay, you know, especially when older folks walk from one room to the next, you know, you walk from your living room to the kitchen, and when you get to the kitchen, you think to yourself, well, why did I come in here now? You instantly forget. Mm-hmm. And what they found, what British researchers found, is that there's this thing that the brain does to compartmentalize the importance of different memories and different things. We tend to compartmentalize everything, including our experiences. And so what happens is when you walk from one room to the next, your brain basically, out of habit, flushes the old, you know, important things from the old room and basically says, okay, this is a new room. I have to pay attention to this room's things. And the old room's thing, the old room's idea of why you came in there is no longer important. So it gets flushed out. Well, it's the same thing with the dreaming state. Basically, this is another barrier where your brain wants to compartmentalize, and you have to train yourself to carry those memories and experiences forward across that threshold. So basically, learning to remember your dreams and forcing yourself to retain that little amount of awareness on the other side trains you to hold more consciousness, conscious awareness on the other side of the sleep barrier, and be able to pick at those threads of awareness. And that helps with out-of-body experience and remembering them in the morning.
Well, there you go, Steph. You're on your way.
Hey.
You're on your way to out-of-body experiences.
Yeah, so now Stephanie's got her marching orders. She can take some vitamin B6 and start a dream journal. Stephanie, and Heidi's got her marching orders. She can, you know, transition from the lucid dream to the out-of-body state and go exploring.
I didn't think I'd get homework tonight. I'm game for it.
But seriously, guys, this is like the most fun ever. Pardon?
I said, this is awesome. I'm digging this homework. this is good.
Interesting homework, that's for sure. Huh?
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to work on it tonight. I don't lucid dream every night, though, but maybe by doing what you said, Bob, with all the other steps, this can get you to the point of lucid dreaming more, which could then be the doorway to more out-of-body experiences.
Right, and even just talking about it like we are right now, even just talking about it will plant the seeds of that information in your subconscious, and your subconscious will basically take a step back and say, okay, guys, let's notch up the priority on this out-of-body stuff a little bit. So what you might find is that tonight when you go to sleep, you might find yourself with unexpected lucidity or consciousness or awareness, and you might find yourself remembering in the morning your dreams or other experiences that you have. It's definitely worth a try. And, just talking about it and reading about it, any little thing you can do to get your subconscious working on that problem helps.
Yeah, that's a good point, because you move in the direction of your thoughts and that energy opens up. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. Definitely.
Very cool. Very cool.
It is very cool. So, Bob, I was going to ask, do you work with people? Because talking to you, it's almost like I feel you could just, almost like a hypnosis or something, is have us go into an out-of-body experience, like walk us through it. Is that possible? I'm not saying right now, but could you do something like that, like help someone go into an out-of-body experience?
It is possible, and I talk about that. That's one of the techniques that's used to achieve out-of-body experience. The problem is not many people are very susceptible to hypnosis, and there's a fair number of people who are actually resistant, highly resistant to hypnosis, and I'm one of them, so I have a hard time with it. I've been working on, I was talking to you a while back about, I've been working on a fifth book called Hacking the Out-of-Body Experience, which is basically about consciousness hacking to achieve, using, you know, principles of science to achieve out-of-body experiences. And hypnosis is one of the techniques that I use, or that I explain in there. One of the more popular forms of hypnosis to achieve out-of-body experience is called the Christos technique. And it was invented, well, I don't know if it was invented by Jerry Glaskin, but he's an Australian guy named Jerry Glaskin, who at least brought the subject to light with a couple of books that he wrote. And this basically is walking you through not only hypnosis, but using a couple of helpers to do certain massages of your head and your feet. So one, you have one helper at your head and one helper at your feet, and then you're being walked through with hypnosis, basically, to achieve the out-of-body state. I know I've seen William Buhlman do that in some of his out-of-body seminars as well, and Buhlman has this fabulous voice for hypnosis. I mean, it's just, you know, perfect for hypnosis. I've been told I could probably do hypnosis as well. I think people fall asleep when they listen to me anyway. So it probably wouldn't be much of a stretch. Yeah, I've never really been certified or tried to get a degree in hypnosis or whatever. And I think part of it is because I have been pretty resistant to it myself. And I know a lot of people are.
Right. I'm just wondering, like, you, instead of, like, someone walking someone into the hypnosis, like, you walking someone into lucid dreaming, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, you being that catalyst or the door opener for someone, but is that, like, talking him through it or something? I don't know. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there are hypnosis scripts out there for out-of-body, and a good friend of mine named Madonna Kettler Geis. I think she dropped the Kettler, so it's Madonna Geis, G-U-I-C-E. She is a certified hypnotherapist, and she trains hypnotherapists. I mean, she's like one of the foremost people, I guess. She goes all, you know, all over the world to these seminars and that. But she's kind of an expert in it, and I actually helped her develop, and she developed an out-of-body hypnosis script to walk through, and she asked me to come in and tweak it and develop it, and so we went back and forth a couple times and developed a really nice script for that. I don't know if she's taken that anywhere or done a recording that she sells or what exactly, but I think she's got a Facebook presence, and she's got a website and that too. But yeah, people can look her up and maybe get that from her. But yeah, it's certainly a good way to get there if you're able to do hypnosis.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool.
Now, you know, Ghost Dance in our chat room has said double or shared lucid dreaming can be a trip. So you can share a dream or a lucid dream with someone else. That's very cool. That's interesting. So how do you do that?
Actually, well, okay, so I've got this theory about four different states of basically four different states of consciousness where we're dissociated from our physical body, and it depends on whether or not the reality that you're perceiving is subjective or hallucinated, or if it's objective and real, and it depends also on whether or not you're conscious or unconscious. So if it's subjective and you're unconscious, that's what we call a normal dream. If it's subjective and you're conscious, that's a lucid dream. In an out-of-body, you're both objective and conscious, but there's this fourth quadrant, and I always put it in the lower right, where is the realm of shared dreaming. And in that world, people are unconscious typically, but they're experiencing the same objective reality. And so they can be, you know, you can have two friends or whatever, and they can describe, oh yeah, they were both standing on the, you know, on the Golden Gate Bridge, and they're both seeing the same, you know, ship go by and all of this, and it's a shared dream, but they're both unconscious. Now in that paradigm, I would say that if you're experiencing a shared objective reality and your conscious, then I would call that an out-of-body experience. So maybe if it's a shared lucid dream, if you will, that, you know, what's the difference between that and an out-of-body experience? It's you're perceiving an objective reality rather than a hallucinated reality or story of experience, as I like to call it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Have you ever shared an out-of-body experience with someone?
No, I haven't. I don't know that many people who are proficient enough to do it, and I'm not good enough at out-of-body experience where I can say, oh, let's sit down and at this particular day, on this particular hour, we're going to both have an OBE and meet here. I'm just not that good. Basically narrow it down, you know, if I lie down and focus on doing it for a couple of good hours, let's say on a Saturday or Sunday morning, and have no distractions and, you know, all of this, then, yeah, maybe after 45 minutes. But to try and, you know, get to an experience where you're both at the same place in the same time, there just aren't that many people out there that are enough to be able to do that.
Have you ever run into anybody else while you've been lucid dreaming, not like a planned thing?
Well, I mean, you run into people all the time.
Someone you knew, like that you knew.
I've had a lot of OBEs, so there have been a lot of different instances, right? For example, I've had experiences in which when I was younger and living at home, I would induce an out of body. I'd stand up, I'd walk through the house, and I'd enter my parents' bedroom, and they'd be sleeping in bed, and I'd try and they'd be completely asleep, and they'd have no conscious awareness of me. They would act like I wasn't there, and I'd try to shake them or whatever, and they wouldn't respond, you know, that kind of thing. And there have been other times when I've gone to a person's house, for example, and it's somebody that I know. And let's just say I visit my brother, for example, and he's in his kitchen and he's, you know, getting out pots and pans or whatever, washing dishes. And I'll try and talk to him, get his attention or whatever. And it'll be as if it seems as if I can talk with his subconscious mind. And so he will respond to me. But, you know, I'll hear his thoughts telepathically and he'll talk to me, but he'll act very distracted. And so that's kind of how you can tell the difference between somebody, if you're interacting with somebody who's still in the body, or somebody in, you know, who's completely, you know, like a spirit or something like that, if you will. If you're talking to a spirit in an out-of-body experience, they'll engage you and talk to you one-on-one, just like any normal conversation that you have in the body. If you're talking to somebody who's in the body while you're out of body, like I'm talking about my brother, you're washing dishes, they act very distracted and they won't look at you. They'll continue doing what they're doing. And if you talk to them, it'll be like you're bothering them. Like, you know, go away. I don't want to talk right now. They don't say that, but you get that feeling that they don't want you there. Or whatever, you know, I'm just using my brother as an example, but I've done that, in many cases, to many, many different people. And they always act distracted and not focused. They always are like preoccupied with what they're doing in the body.
That's interesting, because I wonder if they don't feel you. I mean, they feel you, but they don't understand what they're feeling. Do you think that's it? So it's more like a nuisance, like, hey, why am I so distracted? Like, focus, you know, what's happening? Or do you think that there's some kind of, I don't know. I mean, it's just interesting because they are aware that you're there on some level.
Yeah, obviously on some level. I think, I think whenever you think of another person, even when you're in the body, if you think of another person, I think that there's some kind of vibration that reaches out and grabs that person, whether it be quantum fields or whatever. But I believe that there is some kind of a form of contact, and at a subconscious level, that contact will be known. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times our conscious self is too distracted and too focused on worldly events and our in-the-body stuff that's happening in our five senses, and we don't, you know, step aside enough or quiet our mind enough to focus on these other sources of input. So yeah, at a subconscious level, I'm sure that they know you're there, and but yeah, they're not going to bring that necessarily to your conscious awareness. I mean, after the fact, I'll ask the person, you know, gee, you know, I was there last night or you know, yesterday morning, and I visited you. Did you perceive anything? They'll say no. You know, I never did. And so they don't have any conscious memory of that. Which brings up another subject. I get a lot of requests of people asking, oh, can you just come to my house and pull me out of body? And I've tried that many times, and it just doesn't work. And I've talked to other experts in the field, like William Buhlmann, for example, tried it as well, and I've talked to several, and they can't get it to work either. So maybe it's a whole different level of proficiency that you need, or maybe it's just not possible. But I have not been able to pull someone out of body, and what I've perceived is when I try and do so, they'll like fight and kick and scream and basically say, no, get away. I changed my mind. I don't want you here. Go away. And it's like they, you know, and you talk to them back in real life and in physical reality, and they're like, no, ignore me. You know, I really want you to pull me out. And so well, I've gone back and forth a few times, but it's, yeah, I've not had any success there.
I wonder if it's some kind of like universal law that you have to do a out-of-body experience on your own with your own intention, because can you imagine if there were some bad people out there that could do out-of-body experience and go and take someone out of their body because they could? Like, cool. I wonder if there's something governing that not being able to happen, even if the person in conscious, you know, daytime reality says, yeah, do it, I'm okay with it. But I wonder if there's some law that says that's not going to happen.
Well, a lot of people believe that when you're out of body, your vibration level or the purity of your thoughts or whatever, how loving of a person you are, dictates where you can go and what levels of reality you can visit. And a lot of people think that if you're going into the OBE with a bad intent, that you're going to be either unsuccessful at leaving the body or because your vibrations are too low, or you're going to be automatically attracted to lower areas where you won't be able to do any harm and just, you know, meet up with other, you know, low life people or whatever, you know. So anyway, there's this natural division, and some people believe that that's a law, kind of like karma, where like vibrations attract other like vibrations. I don't know the reality behind that, but you know, at least that's one explanation.
Cool. Well, you know what? This has been super interesting, but Steph, I think we're at the top of the hour. So our time went too fast.
How does this happen?
Oh my gosh. We're going to have Bob. We're going to have you on again.
I know.
This is just fascinating.
Well, anytime.
Yeah.
This is really interesting.
This is very cool. Love it.
Thank you.
You guys are great. I enjoyed being on, and anytime you want to do it again.
Perfect. Well, you gave us homework, right? So next time we talk to you, you're gonna have to see if we did it or not.
I know.
There you go.
Exactly. That's awesome. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Bob.
Yes, thank you. And so next week on The Gathering, Heidi, what are we doing?
We are going to do, we're going to give it a shot again. Light as a feather, stiff as a board. We're doing it on the air. We will have our act pulled together this time because last time we didn't do it right.
Okay.
And but it still worked a little bit.
It did.
I'm excited for next week. We're going to have a small group. We're going to do it at the studio, and we're going to see what happens. So join us next week.
Yeah. So to do that, and we will see you then at same bad time, same bad channel, right here on the ParaX Network. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening, and thank you, Bob, for joining us tonight.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys. Thanks.